You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Wayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Baby.
And it's me, Brian, and his tickly throat, which may cause coughing incidents throughout the podcast.
It's not that one, folks. It's the other one.
Well, I don't know. It may have been that one, and now it's another one. Because if you look on the thing, it says, oh, you may take weeks to recover from the cough. I have no idea whether I had it or not, because no testing.
That's what we had in this house. And that's the same thing Dada said to us. And now, when you're going about, when you rarely escaped out to do your daily things, and you got a little cough because of that, people are giving you the glance saying you should be inside.
I saw one woman with the little face mask thing, and everyone was giving her a wide berth when I was out. It was pretty funny.
Anyway, we are covering anime from the week March the 9th to March the 15th, 2020. And we're going to start with our solitary exception, and that is Akka, the OAV from, I think, a couple of weeks ago on Crunchyroll, February, I think, in Japan. Niall would have been the one who's watched it the most recently, so tell us what happens.
I did forget to watch it again.
Well, it is the set straight after the end of the Akka series. That's when the sort of the system of bureaucracy, which as we saw, it could easily gotten swept up and involved and instigated in a coup d'etat against the monarchy, but was cleverly sidestepped by the work of Geonosis and his network of compatriots. So now the former system where they had sort of five big wigs running the show, they've now I think they've all stepped down, or most of them have stepped down.
Yeah, it's more like a department by department thing rather than five presidents or whatever.
Four of them stepped down, and the other one was part of a country which has seceded, but it's not quite clear whether the country which has seceded.
They're a very Brexit right now.
Have even let him back into the country.
They might be mad at him for the whole attempted coup thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's sort of what's swirling around right now. Now Gene is positioned as the deputy director or the vice director of Akka as a whole.
He's exactly the same job, but because everyone above him has quit, he actually is in a much higher position of power.
Yeah. Pretty much. But he's like rolling the show. There's preparations being made afoot for the celebration of the anniversary of Akka being founded. It's going to be a big celebration of all the different districts and states involved, kind of, you know, contributing, showing off the best that their part of the country can do. Mm-hmm. But there's some like a little bit of a dispute, a little confusion about one of the states, Bira, doesn't know what to say. There's some argument.
With what representation, what space, and what thing they've been given to do, basically.
Yeah, so he goes and goes to investigate that. And also he's dealing with a new subordinate, Parrot. He's new to Akka, and this guy's got some fairly, some kind of suspicions or kind of anxieties about certain events that are going on. He wants to see if he can get the ear of Gene and be getting some help out with that.
In any other situation, it would be paranoia, but considering what just nearly happened, warranted, yeah.
Yeah. Is he new, or was he working with directly under the directors before? I can't remember.
He's new to Gene.
That's true. Yeah.
So what they're keeping, just kind of watching, looking at the movements of the former directors, and they're meeting up, and they're wondering, are they meeting up with a dude from Fuwaru, the kind of oil-rich desert district, which was the plotter behind the coup d'etat, and they've since seceded from the union. Are the former directors like meeting up with them in secret, or the plan to meet up? Might they share some of the views or opinions? There's kind of worries about that because they are all so close, like had a very close relationship not so long ago. Might they be sympathetic to their cause and, that's causing some problems there, because we're trying to establish a new way of running the country. So right now we're kind of being vulnerable, probably a few blind spots we're not accounting for. So we're trying to press ahead and
what we're doing. We're also wary of sort of this element, this kind of thing of rising up and getting more vulnerable, and then they get to succeed in the coup by one way or another.
Hmm.
Also, Aka, Jean is wandering after Sister Lata. She's traveling around. She was visiting the royal district and visiting the relatives anyway and have a nice little weekend there. But, you know, he's visited by one of her teachers at school saying, oh, she's getting on grand, but she's had this assignment and she's usually not late handing in stuff. This is about, like, an essay about her career path going forward into the future. It's like, oh, okay, I see. And, Jean's kind of like, he's missing her and wandering after her and thinking, I guess she's starting to grow up now.
Yeah, because he catches a glimpse of her with a boy at the airport, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's going on work on the airport to someplace else where she's coming back home, and he's just like, well, I guess she's at that age now, and we're just gonna grow further and further apart. And,
yeah. It's cool. He's not trying to like interfere. He's just worrying about this. Will we have our same relationship going forward?
He's
a pretty chill dude, as he is wont to be about these things. But yeah, he's still wandering after it. Well, this is there. It goes to Beira there and he has a little reunion with Nino there, who's following his real dream of being a photographer. He's up here to catch some shots of the Aurora Borealis. It's very good. It got printed in all the magazines. It's really nice.
I think I was really amused by the guy who grew his hair out. I can't remember his name, who was put in that district, where he's like, hey, what's your type? You guys should get together. You'd be so cute. And your man's just stifling laughing. You know, the guy's going like, fuck off. I'm into ladies. What the hell?
Yeah. Well, no, he's saying, like, hey, what we're saying about, like, oh, I chief director Mauve, again, in her promotion. she's a pretty nice lady. What about her? He's like, no, I plead the fifth, sir. I'm going to crack open a cigarette.
Yeah, because her line at the end is very ambiguous. It's like, is she talking about careers or are they talking about them too?
Yeah, it's pretty great. It's funny for us, but it's terrible for him.
Yes, because he's like, terrible at reading it in the first place.
Yeah, he's for a guy who's like a lot of people person fucking stuff, he's not very good at reading that kind of emotional content. I guess that's what he's missing out from his sister as well, since that's not a big conspiracy thing for him to try and sort out.
Yeah. What's it now? I get kind of hazy on it there. I know Nino goes to visit to that school because the teacher of the, I guess he's the teacher of one of the classes, or he's the overseer of the photography club anyway. And
it's either like his art teacher or photography teacher, basically the guy he learned from in secondary school or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about Lata and about, again, just life in general, particularly Nino's life, whereas I guess the teacher is kind of aware one way or another of what Nino had to do, and you know, and he's only kind of now really living his dream of what's kind of living his kind of ambition, his passion of being a photographer, not for purposes of surveillance or espionage, just for doing it for the love of it.
Yeah, because he always had a good eye for it, and he was always quite good at it, and he always wanted him to kind of follow that. And there's a lot of, like, especially after revelations in the last series, like where he kind of turns to Nino and is like, hey, what were we doing when we were that age? And your man's kind of like, he's much older than you do. For secret espionage reasons. But yeah, there was a lot of kind of moments of that where the context has changed of their relationship, but it's still people trying to just work it out between each other, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it just turns out that at the celebration, we're getting to the day of it, and it goes ahead just fine. Because there's some, like, letters that are being passed around as well. You know, you see the suspicious, like, letter with the wax seals being sent to all of the former chiefs, and they're reading it, and it is some kind of hidden plot or anything like that. No, it turns out it was a letter sent by Fuaro district, basically explaining their actions and why they went ahead with them, and especially some kind of remorse to that end. So it's like, oh, well, they're actually only meeting them because they're all old mates, and there's nothing, no kind of conspiracy going on here. They're just old pals, haven't seen each other in a while, and trying to just meet up, enjoy, have a time at a big celebration for the country. So, because we all love this country, you know, it's got its problems, sure, but it's our country, and it's trying to find its way forward now, like into the future, and, you know, we're pretty okay with that. It's the kind of thing that's like, you know, things are changing, and they can feel it can be a little scary. You can feel nervous or anxious about it going forward. And it might be a while before it settles down and finds its feet, but we have to sort of trust in the next generation that they'll be able to carry it on and make things better for everybody.
Yeah. We get a bit of, the guy from the gambling area, because he doesn't turn up because he's beaten the game in a similar way to how he was sent to the capital in the first place.
I still love how it's not just him, but everybody who lives in that state is always speaking gambling terms and analogies and metaphors.
Yeah,
and just can't turn it off.
And the names they get given by their parents.
Are you naming up to a card game or a suit or a flush or something? I don't fucking know.
Yes, Baccarat. He'll be a fine electrician.
I can't remember. Did we see our cop, the cop?
Rail?
Yeah. I couldn't remember seeing him, but he might have been there lurking somewhere.
Yeah, he's got a freeze frame, some of the restaurant or cafe scenes, perhaps.
But obviously, then it teases us another OVA as... Gene and Nico can't. They're struggling to remember their own choices when they were teenagers. That's clearly a setup for another OVA.
Hey, you want to watch a bunch of handsome dudes just hanging out and being cool? It's like, what if they were younger?
You've had the sequel, now have the prequel.
And again, it'll change the
high
context.
School. Whoa.
It'll change the context of their relationship a little, since you now know what it is going in, but kind of what it became.
And the teacher calls, their old teacher, the principal, calls him by Necox as his full name. So I don't know if that came up. There's a few things where I was like, I kind of wish I'd watched the entire series again before watching this.
Yeah, like I remembered roughly who he was, but I was like, who's the dude with the really soft mustache? I was like, oh my God.
I was surprised he was still around, because obviously.
Yeah, no, that was the thing as
he
well.
He was the other spy in disguise.
But I guess, like, he wasn't, nothing came of it, so he still has the same job.
And his mission, the coup, such as it was foiled. That was his objective, because he's there to protect the royal family.
Mm. Yeah. But he was my favorite thing, the fact that we all commented on how his mustache looked like a fake mustache when we were watching the series. And then it turns out If not a fake mustache, it was a metaphorical fake mustache.
Well, it was a mustache as a disguise. Yes. We were all focused on the mustache, and it was like, apparently he grew it.
We were all focused on the hair color, because it didn't conscience a reality where someone could just dye their hair as a form of disguise, because they're idiots.
It's a weird thing we found out in Pet. It's like, oh yeah, anime characters can dye their hair. I forgot that would be possible.
Don't, despite, like, not, having revisited Akka in a little while, it's still, I think it had a very, close, it was kind of a soft place in my heart for the whole thing. And this is a nice way to revisit it and visit some of these characters, some of these fun lines, and just have a really chilled out, relaxing, 45 minutes or so. Certainly,
it reminded me of a lot of the stuff I did enjoy about the series as well.
Reminded me of just that soundtrack as well. Really easy, cool stuff. Great stuff to throw on. If you've had a nice afternoon reading a book, or if you've got just kind of thinking of it and better to put on, it's good.
And I should say, for a story where next to nothing happens, it's really well animated, this OVA.
Oh, it's excellent. Like, basically, they think a thing's happening, but a thing isn't happening. Yes. It's all fine. Everyone's fine. And that's the story. And it's just like, it's just a chill fucking time where there's a little bit of tension left over.
Oh, man. So chain smoking Sakuga in there. But that's your thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, they make a thing of that as well with the new guy. He's like, hey, can I bum a cigarette? And he's like, oh, sorry, I just smoked my last one. And he finally gets a cigarette and he obviously splutters because nobody else smokes in this fucking country. So they'd be bad at it. Yeah.
Yes. This would be the sort of animation that Mizusaki from Isoken would be all over.
I was seeing that scene where he puts on his fucking jacket, and I was just like, that looks nearly fucking rotoscope. The amount of detail they put into, like, the way he twirls around his hand and flicks out the sleeve, and I was just like, fuck.
I was struck by as a little Josh when he's on the phone to Lata and he in a taxi, and just the way he's leading, looking out the window, and the passing street lights just flaring over the window of the taxi. It was this is very sedate, very normal scene, but the amount of effort that went into the various moving parts of it is something else.
Mm-hmm. This is definitely that that kind of animation person's they'd be very happy with this. Yeah.
And I
enjoyed it as well.
Up. I was going to quickly move on before we talk too much long about this.
I'm good.
Episode 10, Broken Fish Tanks.
I thought that'd be a metaphor, but it was literal.
Yes.
It was both.
It was both, but I mean, like, it was very, very literal. Yeah.
Subtext is for cowards.
My notes were, Tsukasa is losing it. Hiroki is losing it. Turns out Katsuragi never had it to lose it in the first place.
We feel worse for him again? Yeah, what the hell? He's there this whole episode going like, oh, everyone's fucked but me. This is great. And then one guy goes in, this is your fucking fault. And he's like, what?
Long's going to the CEO. Why don't we just kill this guy? He's fucking up. I kind of like the guy. He's this idiot, but he doesn't know how much of an idiot he is. That makes him very useful.
I had Hayashi program him to be the perfect subordinate.
He's 100% loyal to me, to the point of his own fucking detriment and stupidity. So I'm going to keep him around.
Yeah.
Poor bastard.
Yeah, the thing which struck me in this episode is that we know, like, Tsukasa's motivations, because he never stops talking about his motivations.
I mean, like, talking or, like, thinking, monologuing. Yes. Yeah, sure.
And it's like, Long and Jin have definitely got, they're the non-monologuers, so they've hidden their cards fairly well.
I do like the way his internal monologue is in Chinese. I thought that was quite well done.
Yeah, I believe there's some complaints about how good a Chinese it is, but hey.
Oh, I imagine the accent isn't great, but yeah.
Hiroki has it out with Tsukasa. I was like, oh, that happened very quickly. Tsukasa does not look well.
I don't think he's 100% back from being crushed, which is a thing you're not supposed to get back from anywhere, so yeah.
He's alternating, you know, like frosting or drooling at the mouth.
His eyes appear to be a bit crazy every now and again. Yeah.
Like, he's trying to, like, lay out later on a new scheme to Long when he turns up, and he's just this swivel-eyed lunatic. He's trying to lay out this complex scheme, but he's this artist, like, shouting and screaming and raving about it.
His drool with a towel, which you don't know whether... And that is one of my favourite scenes of the show so far, that bit, because not only you've got that, you've got what appears to be the present day in a flashback, almost happening in the same room as Long turns his head. So he turns his head one way, he's talking to the CEO. He turns his head the other way, he's talking to Tsukasa. And the bit where Tsukasa then lays out his plan as to say, Long's telling him they've got to kill Hiroki. And also there's like, are we going to bring Mei Ling? We see she's already, they get there super fast. So
I guess they were already in town.
Well, we know they're already in town because we've seen them in town.
Yeah, but your man didn't know that.
Time and geography seem to be falling apart for Tsukasa.
That's a fair point.
And the bit where Tsukasa's laying out his plans, no, we don't have to kill him. We can do all these other things. And then that grin we just see in the side, the darkened side of the frame with Long's face, has Long manipulated Tsukasa into coming up with this plan? Was this what he wanted all along?
It feels like it. It's like, oh, I got you, motherfucker. To manipulate him into doing this for whatever other purpose, or basically out himself as being a not company man.
Yes, because they're already manipulating Satoru, aren't they? And his ostensible plan, as far as we know, is to get hold of Satoru and Hiroki so they can make more babies. Jin's ostensible plan is to get Satoru near the CEO so she can see memories of her mother, but her story doesn't quite seem to...
Is that a way of getting Satoru on her side?
If we see her on the phone setting up and her meeting to try and start off the charade, and she's just regretful on the phone of what she's like said to him again to arrange a meeting for. And so I think she's been leading him on with her sad story that, yeah, to keep him on side, and now she's feeling some regret about it.
Yeah, but then he asks...
No, I feel like there is a level of sincerity with her, but she's definitely not playing all her cards
yet. Yeah, because he asks a question which doesn't seem to punch her. I can't remember exactly what it is, because she shows a photo of her quote-unquote mother. And then also they start, her and Long are kissing, and I guess they're cousins?
Yeah, I thought they were related somehow, so I presume cousins.
But are they related at all? Is that another clue that she's not actually related to? Anyway, there's something up with her story. I can't remember exactly what Satoru says. It seems to put her on the back foot a bit, so I'd like have to...
Oh, like, wasn't that, why didn't you just, get into Hayashi's head?
That's it, yeah.
He was the one who not trained her mother, but, like, got her mother out of her, psychotic kind of psychic episode.
Calmed her mind, yeah.
That's it, yes. So even whether that story as whether it's her mother, whether that story's true or not, we have no idea.
It could be mother in terms of someone who trained her. It might just be completely unrelated. I'm playing the part of the daughter today. Yeah.
Yes. And the kind of problem is the one person who would know is lying on a hospital bed,
with brain dead.
Probably brain dead. Yes. How does it end? It ends pretty. Oh,
it ends with herself talking to Satoru and him kind of going through the stuff, and she kind of reveals that it's like, hey, so we got your master back, and he's super excited. It's like, oh, is she gonna? Because she seems to be leading into, I got some bad news. He got crushed.
Yes.
Or what way is she leading it into him for a fall? It looks like it, because he's super like happy to have his boy back.
That's it. Yeah, because it went by like a whip.
And that's not even to exclude the bit earlier when Hiroki is confronting Tsukasa, and it's like, I can understand your rationale, but still, that's unspeakable that you did that to the person who gave you your peak. Like, why the fuck did you do it? Like, if this is fucking you up, man, it's company. Why can't you just run away and tell him, but yeah, can run away. First, we gotta do this one last thing, and then it'll be clean. We'll be gone. We'll be scot-free.
Initially, he doesn't even want to run away, because it's like, well, then I'd be just like the guy who left me. And it's like, no, we're running away together. It's different. Like, he has to talk him into running away as being a sensible option.
Yeah, and it's like Hiroki is really trying to, bring him back from the edge. But just Tsukasa is raiding on him. He's obsessed. He's fucking completely unstable. And it's really, there's a layer of cruelty and horror to it that Hiroki really depends on Tsukasa. It's just somebody who really loves him and feels safe around. And then this person that you really trust and confide in and love just turns on you. Cause he's like going out the door, trying to escape. And Tsukasa just wants to say, no, cause Hiroki, I'm sorry, come back. God, it's okay. It's not true. And then one of the company guys comes around the back to try and nab him.
Who he'd called earlier on the phone. Like, yeah, it's not like he wasn't unrelated. It's like, no, I specifically am distracting you, so this dude can fucking taser you.
Yeah, presumably that's the bodyguard he was sent in lieu of a gun in the previous episode.
Yeah. Mm. Then like he locks the cast in the shop, he runs away, and the cast is just pounding on the door. You won't get away! I'll fucking find you! And that's just really fucking messed up, this scene of domestic abuse playing out.
Because that's the way your man's kind of looking at it. Wait, if you were this guy's pet, and he finding out what the fuck a pet is, which is messed up enough, you were this guy's pet, and you crushed him, but I'm like your pet? So is this something you expect of me? You think I'm going to fucking try and kill you or something? That's fucked up, man. Like that he would take his past toxic relationship and apply it to his current relationship. Yeah. It's very weird to him and very disconcerting. Really, really good stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's entertaining. Grossing.
I was worried for Katsuragi for a moment there. But once the CEO said, no, you can't kill him, because...
He's too stupid to die.
He's the one guy he can trust, because he's been pre-programmed. Except he can't, because Hayashi is already programmed to do other things as well.
He's got nothing else going for him. Just you can't take this off him. He would crush him. He did nothing.
Oh dear.
Then we've got Super Shiro episode 22, Quiet During Nap Time.
Don't wake the baby, baby.
Yes.
Now I'm questioning the logic of the show, because you had Shiro telling your man to be fucking quiet with his super loud, deep voice. It's like, shut up, you idiot. You'll get us all killed. That was pretty fun.
Yeah. It's, where is the, what's the bone this time? Oh, it's the toy.
Some of the kid is on. Yeah.
Even where he's holding it, the entire O'Hara family are having an afternoon nap. But the Himawari, the baby's clutching this bone-shaped toy, so it's got to be a bone either. No embellishment needed. But the guy's sneaking in gear, but he can't wake anybody up because he can't know they were superheroes. He can't transform really quietly. Well, not quietly, does it? He's got to do a super beam later on very, very quietly. Super beam whisper mode.
Yes.
And initially, Deckapoo. I was messing it up. Deckapoo is just like, fuck it, I don't give a shit. And he's like, no, dude, we can't. It's very rude to interrupt people's nap. And he's like, okay. And he gets on board and they fight over the bone, but then they have to give it back to the baby, otherwise the baby will cry. And Deckapoo displays a hidden talent we didn't know he had.
on the scale here, because these are two small dogs, come crawling in there, sneaking into the house, and these are just like regular sized human beings, but the scale and the way that they appear, are just, seems so kind of intimidating and.
Yeah, just the huge dad's hand reaching around to scratch his arse. It's just like, oh shit.
It's like Jurassic Park. This is. Blam.
Yeah, Decapan's your fella from Most of Batsy.
Yeah, I do. I was just like,
he's also an inventor. He shrinks him, and then she's got a new toy to play with, this tiny dog. So it's okay to take the boat away. And then checks in with Satellite, and he's double sure because Himawari thought he was.
Yeah, I kept the smell of it kept putting the baby to sleep because it smelled so nice. So. Or exciting and whatnot. You know the three fucking things that it smells like.
And then a massive explosion still didn't wake them up.
Yeah, you probably would have been fine.
So Double Jason blocks everything out. Keeps everything in.
Next week, they're going to the Space Museum.
Welcome to the Space Museum. That sounds pretty good. Cartoon antics there. You picture them there in a rocket at some point, so good stuff.
It's going to be a big bang, baby.
Didn't get as many babies this week as we thought we would.
I'd be very quiet. I'd see the baby really loud, beyond the edge of hearing.
Then we got My Hero Academia, episode 85, School Festival Start, in which the school festival does not start.
Well, I guess it's starting in like, off-screen.
It starts officially at 9 a.m, but probably not a lot going on because
you've
got a business class to sell in keyrings, you can get one of those, I suppose, but all the good stuff is not until later.
The events aren't on, yeah.
I think the non-Deku gentleman thing is picking up Eri and taking her, and the beauty contest entrance.
We get your man like saying, it's like, what the fuck are you dressed like that for, that fucking guy?
It's like, oh, I entered you because you've been busy doing this, so you couldn't hit me with your giant hand.
But didn't you just like hire the other guy just to hit him on the back of the head whenever you went out of line anyway? So
yeah, keep an eye on this guy. He's a real piece of shit.
Yeah, then we're introduced to the favourites, the one who's won it the previous years. Who is dressed like an exaggerated version of a 90s anime princess
a caricature of a Ryoko Ikeda drawing.
Yeah.
Mm. Like foot-long eyelashes, that kind of thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we get the origins of Gentle and La Brava as they're being beaten up by Deku. Well, Gentle's being beaten up by Deku.
You make it sound like he's just kind of wailing on them. They're putting up a decent fight.
Yeah. I mean,
and then putting up a very good fight.
Yes. But he's kind of got it figured out. The first part of the fight is he uses Gentle's powers against him, because we learned in the previous episode that Gentle can't remove his powers himself. They just have to wait for them to dissipate. So all the elastic air that he's using to jump around, then Deku can also use that as well. And also use the springy crane to catapult himself.
I did like the thing of bouncing around him and getting really close for the shot, and then he'd block that, but I'm going to use the ones that are already in the air to do a bank shot. And I was like, oh, that's pretty good.
Doritos got those gloves this morning, but he's pretty handy with them already.
I guess he has been practicing specifically with the flick thing rather than he has the gloves that make it much easier for him to do that. So yeah, that makes sense.
So he manages to take care of them quite quickly to begin with, and then La Brava uses her power, love, her quirk, which increases the strength of whoever she's in love with.
And proportionally based on how much she loves them and that kind of thing.
Yes, and this is where we see how her fandom saved her from a life of crime. At least that's what Gentle seems to think of it.
More like a possible suicide.
Yeah, but I think she said, he says, well, yeah, that might be like the, what he was meaning. I can't remember. Yeah, exactly what he, the way he phrased it sounded like it was crime, but yes, it probably wasn't suicide. Having said that, I kind of think she still comes across younger than she is in this flashback.
Well, I mean, like even with his flashback, he's shown to be a lot younger than you think he is, but yeah, she's still pretty young.
Yeah.
She's like you say, 20s, because she's 21
in the fact sheet for her. But I can't remember if that ever came across in the comic or whether it was hastily added by the editor saying, please clarify that this character.
Well, yeah, so he's like in his mid to late 20s.
He's 31.
Oh, he's 30, is he? Okay. Because he was shown to be like quite young, and it's just like he has white hair and the mustache, and then the black things around his eyes, it actually shows I thought that was a nice character thing they did for him. But it does, all of it kind of adds to make him look a lot older.
Yes. Yeah,
so, to make him look like 50 or 60, basically.
A refined gentleman.
So he took her under his wing, gave her a reason to live again. And, meanwhile, we learn about his past where he really wanted to be a hero, but he was no good. And disobeyed.
He has a very good power, and he seems to be using it well, but it's like trying to use it well in the public without proper training was, you can see how that could go badly for someone.
It's like it caused him trouble in school, and then I try to help people, and then they just wind up, something worse happens, or they get hurt, or I get in the way, and it's as a real knock to your confidence, your self-confidence, your self-worth when you do that.
And his entire thing was like, oh, I want to be like famous and well-known and shit. And then he meets a guy who he went to school with, and it's like, hey, we went to school together. And your man's like, oh yeah, you are. It's like, oh, my dream is already fucking dead.
Now, if I can't be a good enough hero, let's have to be a good enough villain then.
Yeah. That's the option when you drop out of heroism is villainy. And again, one of the fucking themes of the show.
Yeah, because opened up a copy of
Villains
history. It's Destro's book anyway.
Oh, I thought it was a Who's Who of villains.
So it's like a history of villains. It's not Destro's book. Destro's book. No. We will see Destro's book many, many, many times in the next season.
Okay.
Because it becomes a bestseller when it gets republished. Oh dear, I'm losing my voice again. then he takes up this villainy and then all ties in. But, he's like another mirror of, Midoriya, and obviously Midoriya was unable to follow his dream, until he was, gifted a power. And it makes a nice another mirror of, it's like the, Stain fight.
Mm. The reversal of the mirror is obviously them talking about ideals and your man's willing to trample on other people's dreams in order to achieve his own one. Gentle criminal, but Deku's kind of like, I'm all about protecting other people's dream.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. With the whole, like, if you interfere with this festival, they will cancel the festival, basically, is the stakes.
That is true, but Gentle still manages to make it look like no fight had taken place. to save.
He cleaned up after himself. Yep.
Dream. And he just claimed
because he'd lost to him. He felt like, well, it would be bad if you still lost.
Well, so specifically, it's because he has to figure out a way that only he gets arrested and La Brava doesn't.
Yes. To make it look like Midoriya was never fucking there. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So he bounces it Midoriya away as is he just called Hound Dog? Watchdog. Yeah. I can't remember which one he is. Watchdog man's out of One Punch Man. Wrong dog.
He's just a hound dog, I believe.
Faced hero.
His quirk is being a dog man.
Hound dog and a bunch of your man, ectoplasm, is it?
That's him, yeah.
Mm.
And he claims he tripped on a pebble and he'd like to turn himself in. So we're all good for the school festival to actually start next week.
Hooray. You can make that little girl smile at last. Oh, indeed, with a beat down on these two, very tragically broken down people.
Mm.
Mm. It's like, another thing where this superhuman society isn't all, sparkles and rainbows. There are people on under fringes of it who are left unwanted. They're left exiled and outcast and ignored.
Yeah, you feel bad, and this is true to real life as well. You feel bad for people who society and the rules of society have let down. Shit out of their control, not necessarily their fault. They're not even bad people in a lot of cases, but, it's rough. And I thought it was nicely done to kind of give them their backstory. I thought it worked pretty well for them.
Yep. Whether we'll see them again, who knows? Because this series doesn't feel like it's so much of bringing people back except for the League of Villains. But so
feels like they could finish the series, and if there are still superheroes and quirks afterwards, they could do like a million fucking spin-offs, just Marvel Universe, this shit.
They occasionally mention Stain. I think we've seen like Stain reacting to something once in prison. But in the comic, they're like, recently it was like, oh, we have to delay going to see Stain. I was like, no, don't do that to us.
No.
For a start, we don't even know why you want to go and see him in the first place. But
he's coming back. This is Gala.
Well, possibly. Maybe they just need all hands on deck for what's currently going on in the comic. Mm-hmm. Just may have to release not so dangerous criminals as, to give them some backup. Righty-ho, that is My Hero Academia. Now we're on to Case Closed, Detective Conan, episode 972. Got some catching up to do, My Hero Academia. MPD Transportation Department, part 2.
So, like, all these traffic cops are fucked, aren't they?
Only, well...
I wrote down her name, but I forgot where I wrote it down. The one with the pigtails.
Yeah, Mika is not fucked, because she hasn't had it hasn't been a case of mistaken identity. Yubi is fucked because the murderer thinks she's involved in delaying him getting somewhere, which has caused somebody to die.
I did like the way it was like, oh, there are these three suspects that were in like a three-way collision or something like that. It was all on the same day or something like that. But they all had a woman in their life that they really needed to get to, which sounds exactly like the killer's motive, which is really funny to me.
And it happens on the very street in which Kogoro Mori's detective agency is on. But he was away on a holiday with the Residents Association. So Conan will have to go and speak to Amaru and see if he spotted anything. Which allows us to quickly make a brief check back into what we saw at the end of last time we were here.
Remember what happened before that nice cup of tea?
Him and the FBI agent pulling guns on each other. But they don't get to exactly what happened after that yet. But indeed, he did spot a bunch of things. My favourite line in this is Conan mentioning something is suspicious, and I mentioning not as suspicious as a child who constantly barges his way into murder scenes.
Yeah, because all the other kids are like, "Hey, Conan, we're going to school now," and he's like, "Okay, I'll leave this murdered body to the police."
Sigh.
I just like that the police have got used to it.
It's like, oh, little kid. Oh, wait, no, it's him. Actually, this is probably be beneficial. It'll make us look like assholes, but beneficial.
He's going after school, you know, miming telephone with his hand. Send me on the postmodern, okay?
Yeah, so the other cop foolishly goes and speaks to who she thinks it is and tries to tell him to turn himself in, but instead the guy murders her.
Well, she's at his apartment, she tries to pull the door open, and he zaps her, and then he throws her off the stairwell of an apartment building, presumably not the same one he lives, but maybe, no. Who fucking knows?
As she's dying, she types 4 digits into her phone, but then he smashes the phone. And then when they discovered the body, she's turned her head, so she's facing, I think, looking towards another one of those no waiting signs.
Yeah. So this guy was done for, like, running a stop sign or something. I'm not sure what blue circle with a, like, a red line.
It's no
red circle.
It's no waiting, I think.
As opposed to no stopping.
If it's two, it's no stopping at any time. If it's one, it's no waiting. It's very handy in that Japanese, as they explained last episode, Japanese road signs were taken from English road signs.
I can't drive, so I wouldn't know.
This one back into road rage you got right here.
We also learned that he overheard them having a conversation on the phone with somebody called Yumi, which we've learned in an earlier conversation is their friend who's a hostess. Not Yumi, the policewoman, but he doesn't.
But there is a policewoman with exactly the same name, and she's like, hey guys, can you give your friend like a different nickname than me? Because that's going to be confusing to murderers that overhear you talking. But, you know. Oh, well.
Also, we've also got on the case Inspector Megari now, because they find the other body, and I can't remember his position, but the guy who may be a bad guy, but may not be a bad guy.
He's like commissioner or something like
that. Yeah, the one-eyed
policeman. He's got a super cool look.
He has one of the best character designs in the show.
Like, the right side of his face is all fucked up and scarred, like all the veins are coming out, like he got hit by lightning, and he has a blackened one of his glasses instead of an eye patch. He looks red.
Yeah. And he's like got like a grey Abraham Lincoln beard and haircut. Yeah, he's a pretty rad dude. And Inspector Megari still looks exactly the same as he's always done. Japanese Poirot. So Yumi gets sent some of the photos of the murder scene, and then she spots something, so she goes to investigate again on her own. Come on.
They've specifically, okay, now we've had two female traffic cops killed, and the same fucking coin down. This is a copycat, or not a copycat killer, this is a serial killer. We're warning all police officers, and especially female police officers, to watch out. So why would you go anywhere on your own? Everyone buddy up. frustrating.
Yeah, there's a funny bit earlier on where she's getting a phone call from a unrecognized number that she keeps on hanging up on, and it turns out to be her boyfriend/ex-boyfriend.
It sounds like current boyfriend, because yeah, she was up all night playing Mahjong with him. I was just like, up all night playing Mahjong. Yeah, sure. He's calling from like a Mahjong fucking hall, yes, where he's training for a tournament to make it sound like they're not fucking, but they're totally fucking.
He's like, he's basically concerned because people keep on murdering police women, but she's annoyed at him for ringing constantly to be concerned about
her. I mean, like, if he was ringing with the same concern up to now, I would kind of get it, but right now it's like, yeah, this is valid concern, I think.
I like that couple there. They're quite funny, and because it's kind of the relationship which is supposed to be over, but it isn't over, and so there's still kind of being a little bit secretive about it. My favorite bit of recent times is her discussing her boyfriend and Masumi Sarah, I think it's her name, the Duke Kundo Nancy Drew character, discussing her brother, and which turned out to be exactly the same person, but they neither of them know that yet.
Okay.
That's the middle. So the shogi player is the younger brother of the FBI agent, and the middle brother of the Duke Kundo, Nancy Drew, and they're all the children of the third person who's been turned into a child.
Wait, there's a third person as a child?
Yes, Mare.
God damn, I'm gonna have to fucking find a map for this fucking show. I'm like, I am jumping in at episode 900 and such.
Yeah, I don't think they've met, they haven't met her yet. They're just aware that there's a child who lives in the hotel room, that the other detective lives in. And I think Conan's like suspicious. And obviously she's also suspicious of Conan because Conan resembles a child she met, when she was Conan's age at the beach one day. So she keeps on leaving things to try and make him say that he's Shinichi Kudo because he's pretty certain he is. And obviously, having seen her mother shrink, then she's got a pretty good idea that other people might have shrunk as well. Yeah, but then maybe some of that next week, but I'm going to be focused on the older brother when we get back to finding out exactly what happened when the pair of them were cornered by Conan's parents. Yeah, and then the Conan's clue for next week is the blooming road sign we've been seeing in each episode. So,
what was the clue in the last episode? Was it the swing set?
I can't remember.
But yeah, the sign seems like a pretty obvious one. He's using his detective glasses at the second murder scene to, like, I guess angle like what she was pointing at or what she was turning to look at, and it's like the sign again. He seems to spot it, and he's like, okay, that's another pattern, yeah.
Then we've got Inspector, episode 10, Dueling Fictions.
This does seem to be doing the thing I kind of hope it's doing. So it did two of the theories in one episode, or two alternate theories in one episode.
Yeah, it's the kind of rattling on through. So we have one coming in, Star Trek Expedition number two. She actually is a ghost, but what... For what reason does her spirit remain under the sort of terrorizing people? Let's start that back a bit and we'll see. It's some thing involving, remember how a father was seemingly murdered or almost killed and she was a suspect in it? What if her dad was so jealous of her being the big success in the family and being effectively ousting him as a main breadwinner? He felt envious of her success and kind of leverage and kind of influence she had over him. Basically killed himself and made it look like that she...
And purposely wrote into his diary, she's trying to kill me, you know, and then, yeah, made it look like he was killed.
So that she'd be able to ruin her reputation from beyond the grave, and then that would drive her to despair at being hounded in media, so then we had this, that thing where she was out at that building site, and when the girders fell down on her, that she didn't try and escape her fate, she just let them smoosh her.
The further thing to the story was kind of like, okay, this is a bit of a stretch, but I think I got him on the hook because this is for the people who believe in ghosts. So, and then she met her father in heaven and her father was like, yeah, I killed myself to make you kill yourself. And she was so sad as a ghost. She came back as a ghost, is haunting the place out of like mourning to try and convince people. It's like, hey, it was my dad. I didn't actually kill him. He killed himself kind of thing.
And people are going, oh yeah, it's so sad. I feel so bad about it. And then there's an obvious hole in it. Well, why is she like smashing that detective's face then? Why, what was up with that? If she feels so sad and alone, and why did she do that? But that isn't the point though. The point is there's so much sort of confusion and so much kind of competing speculation and theory about it.
If you believe in ghosts, this seems like a more plausible reason for this person's ghost to haunt the place.
It's sort of notable though that, when a part of that is quote unquote explaining it about, oh, her father feeling envious of her success and wanting to, maybe that could be a thread of a grain of truth in there somewhere.
Yeah, she's kind of thinking like, this might be what actually fucking happened based off a lot of the evidence.
Or part of it could be. But she needs to kind of like, create some more confusion for especially number three, because you can kind of sense the hand of Ricka.
I assume these
are
all different
here.
Profiles is what she's doing as well. She hasn't explained that, but I assume that's the case.
Oh, well, she tapped it. We're going to have the same person coming on and saying these four different things, and then like, what the fuck are you talking about? You're just rolling back in your own argument, dude. Get off this forum. And then I feel that at the influence of Rika in the background, as much as Kuro was outside fighting the ghost and overcoming it and trying to grasp her ideal future, she's fighting back just as hard. So we got to hit her with the good stuff. Now, especially number three, who will be the remaining suspect then after the father dies, after Nanase died? There's only the sister left alive at around then. So obviously, the police be looking into wanting to talk to her. So, which you have been doing things to try and evade her fate. No, she didn't do anything. No, the police questioned her, interviewed her, had her suspicions, but it didn't seem to hold up. But it was just something in what she was saying that wasn't kind of adding up. What was it again?
Yeah, she was the notable thing in her testimony is she didn't believe that her sister was really dead.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, well, I mean, like, I know her face was smashed in, so they didn't have the stuff. And one of the things she points out is like, well, the police took fingerprints, but she'd never had a criminal record beforehand, so that doesn't prove anything. What if the body was a body double that someone put to make it look like she died? And that's what the sister's thinking, and the way she's basically she has this whole concocted story where her sister, is going mad thinking that her sister killed by, steel beams is actually not really dead and she's covering it up.
Yeah. And then like the bizarre part of that is
it's a really tenuous one, and she admits it and it's just like, I need to go this fucking thread just to see it through, but it's not a great one. She knows that much going in.
Let's say there was someone close to her who was seeing what she was going through and think, oh, I want to do something to help her out, but I don't know what to do. And then, of course, I'll do this. I'll
invent Steel Lady Nanase, which will be her sister's ghost, to prove to her that her sister is dead, because she can't be haunting people if she's alive. Perfect. Perfect plan.
As they go around town terrorizing people, she realized that, oh, of course, I was fine. My sister is actually dead. No, but now she's a spirit roaming the earth terrorizing people. And
he had to kill the cop because the cop was investigating into it. And if the cop investigated into it, found out this guy friend of hers was pretending to be her dead sister, that means her sister really is alive. So he had to take the cop out of the picture by being a spooky ghost that kills people.
Yeah.
Basically getting in over his head. It's super tenuous, basically.
Yeah. And it is super tenuous. It is just fun. What the fuck is this? This is really weird. But they can feel a tide turning against them. Besides that information have like a massive hole in it, where it's like, well, this person actually cared about the sister, then why would he be doing this? And just inflicting more trauma upon her by resurrecting the memory of
Hey, don't worry, your sister's dead and she's a murderous ghost. It's kind of like, that's not really comforting to someone who's going through a lot of trauma about, like, not believing the truth kind of thing. Making a more terrifying fiction for her. But there's several scenes where you see people arguing back on the forum. And at this one, you can see it's like, oh, this is clearly your one, just literally, instead of, like, changing the tides to suit her kind of thing. She's literally just arguing back on the forum because this one's so full of fucking holes.
It's a little tough right now, but if they've drawn Rika out of the shadow, she's logged on.
Yeah.
Maybe now we can get to her directly and be able to put this matter to rest. So it was just more of an extension of what they were doing. The previous episode was like laying out this possible hypothesis, theory for what the explanation behind the ghost, behind the murders, behind the crime, everything else.
What I'm kind of hoping is by using these three stories and by drawing Rika out, and by basically twisting the narrative in these different directions, the fourth story will be the kind of clincher. The other stuff was just set up for the fourth thing. That's the way I think they're going, but I'm not 100% sure.
It's probably something like there'll be a very informed forum user number 17 log on. Well, you're all wrong, but you're also all right, because here is how it actually
the truth lies somewhere in between.
These elements of each to put together the ideal one.
Yeah, so you basically have three completely random and not the same person people, like, going out with wild theories and going like, okay, there's an element of truth there to that one. And basically, like, constructing, because you've drawn in people from the different sides, if you can make one narrative that gets together all the three stories that have different people liking it, then you'll have a more solid fucking narrative that everyone believes, and that'll obviously make the murderous ghost lady that's chopping up her boyfriend with a steel beam right outside the car less effective at that.
So the aliens, in cooperation with the reverse vampires, or the division of the Rand Corporation.
No, it's still enjoyable. And that dude gets really fucked up in this episode.
Oh, they're having a lot of fun because they can't do really much when they're just like logged onto an internet forum and it's like nattering away. So all of the action save for him getting bisected at one point.
Skewered by a tree. His legs are upstairs while his torso's downstairs, that kind of thing. Yeah.
He keeps getting back up, though. He takes off the jacket partway through, and that's, you know, okay, it's on.
Oh, now it's serious. I don't want to ruin the jacket.
I'm all warmed up. This is go time.
Dear. Yeah. So, yeah.
Was prepared for it to kind of slow down a little bit here, but you know, if they can have even crazier explanation for what actually happened as well towards the end, and they can somehow convince an internet forum to believe most of it, if not all of it, then that will be incredible feat of writing. Well, let's see how they do.
Yeah.
Then over in Toei Town on a Sunday morning. Kiribaja, episode 2, proof of leadership, quick recap of what the best gags from episode 1. The best gag is basically the disrespect that the yellow Kiribaja, the esports guy, gets. So when the red guy first meets all the others, he recognizes them all along a line and they get to the yellow one and go, I'm afraid I don't know who you are. And then later on, when he's designing them all their vehicles, it's like, well, Pink's a surgeon, so she needs a emergency helicopter. Blue is he's an actor who does lots of swords play, so he needs a fighter jet to reflect his personality. Obviously, Green, she's a track and field star. What would be better for her than a supercar? And what's better than what's the best thing for the color yellow, but a JCB digger? He just based it on the color, not my personality. In this episode, though, our hero learns that as he's the red member of the team, he's got to be the leader, even if he doesn't want to be or not. And he's got to remember five as one. But Green is busy, she's got to attend to something personal, so she runs off. Which only leaves the four of them to deal with Rugby Mask, the alien invader who's been sent to open a gate so they can teleport in a giant monster. So in this one, they seem to be teleporting in giant monsters from an agent, as opposed to making that agent grow big. Which is a shame, because Rugby Mask is a much better monster than the actual monster they summon in.
Uh-huh. But you get to see Rugby Mask every week, or most weeks.
No, it's somebody else next week.
Every time?
Yeah, it'll be someone else every time. And then I think it'll just be the same monster, maybe with a different head each time. No, next week it's somebody who involves clamps, because next week the actor has got a giant clamp stuck around his head. For apparently most of the episode.
They don't like. All gonna be like Dick Tracy villains. We got Rugby Head. We got Clap Head.
Oh yeah, these masks are great. So I mean, the rest of the costume is just basically like a black body stocking and a cape. But the rugby mask is great because it's a rugby ball, but it's also got like a collar of grass.
I'm looking at it now. That's wonderful.
It's rough.
and basically all his, like, the minion monsters act like a rugby team and they start beating up the public and he keeps on kicking rugby balls at things to make them blow up. and they have to save, a family who are in a Ferris wheel, which is been blown up. And so, he draws a combined giant robot between, I think it's the jet and the helicopter. They become Sky Mage. And they rescue it. They called in Senna, the green Kiribaja, but she never showed up, and Yellow's mad. And when they go and see her, she's also mad. Because she's like, I've got a life here, I've got to help the track and field team. I've got to compete and help the team get medals. And so the plan is, let's draw another one of her. So they're like, How do we get other crystals? Is there other crystals we can use? Not just the ones which we've turned into vehicles and robots. And they say, yeah, the weapons are all made out of these particular blue crystals. And they're like, but we have to get them a particular way. And the way they get these gems are, they are the princess's tears. And so they get her to read a sad manga, which makes her cry buckets loads of tears. Which is very matter of fact about. As soon as the tears are there, she like closes the manga and she's like perfectly cheerful again.
It's good to get it all out. Like,
yeah. Yes. And they use this to make a doll called, the translation they do. There's a pun in there anyway, but so they made a new pun. This is why I like the overtime fan subs, is they try and, create equivalent jokes. So they call it Gemini.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It is. So yeah, if you touch its hand of this doll, then the doll turns into a copy of you, which you can then command and do what you want. So they do that for Green, but then she shows up and she seems very grumpy. But it turns out that they've previously agreed, oh, your team's very important, and five as one, that means we've got to help each other keep on shining, because that's where we get our power from. So if I'm calling you away from the thing you love, you're not going to be as useful to us when you are available to fight monsters. So, yeah, but she's not fast enough to keep up with the rugby monster. But luckily the real one shows up. She's already won her track event, and then she ran all the way there and runs and tackles the rugby mask and blows him up with his own football. But he still managed apparently to just do enough to bring in the monster. This is after the actor and the surgeon have had to go away because they're also busy. And so the remaining three, he draws another combining robot. This time three of them combine, and it's a proper man in a suit fight with a monster in a suit. No, a man in a monster suit. That's your Kurameji done for the week. They've got a good lead in the guy playing the red Kurameja. The woman playing the green Kurameja is pretty good. I think the yellow is perhaps like the weakest of the acting so far, because his main role in this is just to be bad at red, not being a good enough leader. But I think they're all on board now. We've got his leading philosophy is out in public. It's like, guys, got to keep on doing what you want to do as well as fighting giant monsters. Then Kamen Rider 01, so Mr. Weak, but they're in the middle of a battle between a robot fireman and a real fireman, and a building is on fire and the vice president's life's at risk, and our asshole Thouser has basically said, well, whichever one rescues your vice president, wins. But in order to rescue him, basically the, Huber Gear has to like sacrifice himself because he's not alive. He can be backed up, so he's willing to sacrifice himself so the guy from the Zaya supported firemen can rescue the vice president. Meanwhile, there's a raid about. I don't know whether he set the fire or whether Burning Falcon Jin set the fire. And the raid, they defeat the raid guy, and he turns out to be a member of R&D from Zaya, who took a raid belt from Zaya itself and used it to make sure Zaya would win. And our cop friend is like, I finally prove you're evil and that you're involved. And they get in a fight. Then Jin shows up. He gets in a fight with Thouser, beats Thouser up, gets back Hirobi's key, gives it back to Hirobi. Hirobi is like still like, not sure what to make of this new Jin, or suspicious of this new Jin, as well he should be, because obviously we've now got four different motivations going on. We've got the guy who wants Huber Gears and humans to live side by side. We've got the guy who wants to destroy all Huber Gears, the guy who wants to destroy all humans, and the guy who wants to have humans and Huber Gears live separate lives. And we still don't know where the fourth one of the Metsuperai Jin Rainet are. And so it's Thouser thinks he's won, but the fireman says, no, I didn't win. I would not have been able to save those guys, and if it wasn't for the Huber Gear. they won. And so then they're like, okay, well, we'll look, the final battle will be a public vote on what we do with the old, Daybreak City, the one which had blown up 12 years ago, when an ark crashed onto it and, the human gears ran riot. So yeah, the Hidden Intelligence is saying we're going to make it a, it's going to be like a autonomous city, run by human gears for human benefit. And, so basically next week, it looks like they've both got to make a speech and Naruto is like losing his mind. But it was like a news announcement was like very Babylon. There's been moments where this has reminded me of Babylon, but that was the bit where it's like, this is,
I was going to say, yeah,
very Babylon.
It's one for one normal.
I wonder what like sci-fi came out that like everything seems to be drawn on that same thing. It's like, it's an independent city state and it's going to have its own set of rules.
Don't know. You can just look,
I mean, like, I know that's an old idea, but there must be something recently that everyone was like, oh, that's fucking rad.
Basically, people are more wider aware of, so-called special economic zones around the world now.
That's
where
true,
regulations,
yeah.
You know, regulations for trading and health and safety and the environment don't apply. So, and what risks they pose. Money, good. Everything else seems pretty bad. What's up with that?
He's worried about making a speech, and apparently next week, it's something involving a rapper. So I don't know if he's going to try and rap his speech. I may need to go back to the last episode. Because I don't know whether that guy was lying in R&D or whether he was just given it by the mysterious hooded stranger. Or what the deal is there, but, I'm sure it'll come out in the wash. Then we've got Kitaro, episode 95, The Great Yokai Alliance. This like feels like it's acknowledged that the 3 weeks we didn't have an episode still happened in this world, because it like, opens up with Backbeard just blowing up part of Tokyo.
As just piles everything up, here's all the action you've been missing out on. It would have normally parceled out. Just blam, blam, blam. So much.
Here's my subtle plan, says Nuri. Blackbeard, blow up half of town. Like, dude, let's just do a massive terror act. How about that?
For all yokais, fuck humans. Peace out. Or rather, no, not peace out. Yeah, but much more chilling than that. We cannot be negotiated with. We will not show mercy or remorse for our actions. Eye laser, blam, there goes Shinjuku.
And you obviously get the same reaction from the humans. Yeah.
Yes, but this is all Nurion's because, yeah, then you start getting the yokai organizing as terrorist cells. And then Nurion is reporting the terrorist cells to the humans.
I think he is. I think that's
well,
like outside
it.
In a yes. car doing yes, it. And I've got another one to report on. And obviously, you know, they had the guys, okay, we're going to hit the police departments. We're going to hit the fire department. Then we're going to hit the hospital. And one of them's like, hey, whoa, come on. That's not fucking cool, dude. You know, they're not without morals, these yokai that want to commit acts of terror. But you know, when the police do a raid in them and bust open and I'm going to say kill them all, even though it's not really killing with a yokai, is
well,
it?
Well, we'll see, because obviously it happens to Kitaro by the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's true.
You can reconstitute your form, but it could take centuries.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and there's like a standoff in the forest, and some of them listen to Kitaro, some of them don't. Kitaro's going to have a word with the Prime Minister.
Before all that, though, is it, if you ought to go with digging up his get out of town savings, he's just going to get clear of the situation by a nice island somewhere in his country and just live out his life away from all this.
Somewhere where I'm not going to be attacked by A, yokai, or B, humans, because I'm both. I'm fucked, basically.
Yeah. But Kitaro is like around that admonishing of right. He says, that's cool. If I know you're out there and you're safe, you're living your life, that's good enough for me. And that just puts a lump on his in Nezumi Otoko's chest, and it's like, fuck, he's being really serious and frank
take
right
you,
now.
I'll take you out for ramen. Like, not saying it's going to be the last time we go out for ramen, and Kitaro is even sharing his pork for once.
Because now Nezumi Otoko owes him something. It's as small as that extra slice of char siu pork, but he's got to pay it back. He just turns back, fuck it, I'm at the airport, but I'm going to pull fucking back and help him out. Shit! He doesn't want to owe nobody nothing.
And he's like, oh, I'll go and help you negotiate because I know the Prime Minister.
Oh, we're good friends. This should go great.
It goes terribly. Because, as she explains, you know, when you fall in love and you don't know
there's
the
no logical why, reason yes. to it.
And that's the same with hate.
She pulls a gun from her fucking drawer. It's like, take this bullet, Kitaro. And Kitaro gets shot. And she's like, yeah, sorry, Nozomi Ergo, you're going down. And Kitaro takes, like, the rest of the clip, it seems like.
Well, the spirit air vest is, seems to have blocked most of him. But he's still got, he got the right in the chest. He's wounded. He's in a bad way. The guy got to get clear out of the place. But I guess surrounded by the guards. But then, Shunomon does Mozumon down with a pair of miniguns. It's like, humans ain't worth shit in fighting, but their guns are pretty good.
He does Mozumon after Kitaro gets yes. shot in the head and killed and dead.
Yeah.
And yes. Mana is across the road going like, oh shit! And, you know.
Cause this is all part on. Of, but maybe the flaw in Urien's plan, has he not seen the plans of other villains in Kitaro? Appears to be trying to get Nozomi Otoko onto his side.
No, don't do that, dude. Nozomi Otoko's specific thing is he will lose. That's kind of his whole thing. So if he's on your side, you're on the losing side.
And he will betray you at a moment's notice. And be like, ah, Kitaro, I was planning on betraying him all along. Do not worry.
Well, I mean, like, if Kitaro comes back, then he has all the reason to fucking betray them, yeah. Because he's only with them as like, I hate you guys, but I hate humans more now. Because the president of Japan shot my best friend in the head. So it's like, meh.
I didn't know you were my best friend until just today. Now he's gone. But the vitriol, kind of this, the venom in the performance there of Toshio Furukawa, which is like, oh yeah, he's really hurting from this. It does feel genuine, even for this rat man. But we know he'll turn good.
He'll turn in the end.
For his own thing. It is just feel genuinely aggrieved by this turn of events.
Yeah, only two more episodes to go as we get the second Yokai War next week.
Yokai War 2. What a decade.
The preview seems to be mainly Kitaro in the afterlife.
Seems that way.
Yeah. Then we've got One Piece featuring a large ninja breaking into prison.
I forget how big he is until I see him, like, up against, like, regular-sized Luffy.
Well, he's like a normal-sized body, and then the head takes up the rest of it, but it's like an enormous head. He's probably related to Ivankov somehow.
I think it's supposed to be like a... I get a feeling it's like a Legend of Mystical Ninja Goemon type.
Oh, because he has a big head. Yeah.
Similar with Orochi's design, I think. He's snuck into... obviously he's trying to break them out, but also to let Luffy know that Otama is okay. Which swells Luffy's spirits, even though he's in prison.
He seems to be mostly enjoying prison, yes. for lack of a better term.
He's been in the joint before.
That's true, actually. It's not his first.
He knows his way around.
Meanwhile, the Big Mom Pirates are rapidly approaching and destroying all the defenses of Wano, much to Queen's annoyance. So it's up to King.
It's kind of like, okay, we got him, right? It's like, no, they got past that defense. What? Oh, shit! Just his panic.
This is my job, you know.
felt our job. This felt much clearer than the comic of, like, where everything ended up at the end of this.
Yeah, that's true. It was more rushed in the comic and was more drawn out here, so you can kind of see the pieces where they fall.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, where are the rest of the Big Mom Pirates? Oh, they fell back down the waterfall.
Yeah.
So it's literally just Big Mom who's, in this, gone down the...
The drain?
Drain, yes. We've got a problem. King is this, guy in leather, who appears to be from Skypiea because he's already got wings before he turns into a Pteranodon.
Yeah, he's got black wings.
Not Skypiea, but in the Sky Island somewhere.
Oh, he's got the pointing down wings rather than pointing up wings.
He's also already on fire.
Yeah, he's always on fire. I don't know, is he like an S&M guy and he just likes the pain or something? I don't fucking know.
Because that fist has nothing to do with his Pteranodon powers.
No, no. Just he happens to be on fire.
It just looks intimidating. Like, what's like?
Oh, he does, certainly. Yeah.
Dinosaur, pretty scary. Dinosaur in black leather, also quite scary. Dinosaur in black leather on fire, that's terrifying. That's everybody's worst fear right there.
Also, he's got a really good kick, so, yeah.
Yeah, essentially armament hackies and kicks the, flips Big Mom's boat over, sending her flying off and the boat and the carp flying down the waterfall. And then the rest of the episode is bad page. Is it page one?
Page one.
Page one's bad tattoo looking for Sanjuro, the sober salesman.
And his brilliant plan is I'm going to knock over every sober joint and say, hey, are you Sanjuro? No. You better fucking call for him then.
I forgot he had a bad tattoo and I hadn't figured out till today of like what the joke is.
What is the joke?
They're in Wano. So presumably in Wano, people write from the right to the left. So whoever started tattooing him started with the one.
Oh!
And then ran out of room for the pay. So the P's on his arm.
Yeah, I see. Okay, that's actually pretty good.
That's much more elaborate than the general excuse of, I was drunk when I got that.
Oh, no, the fucking, like, probably half the time the tattooist was drunk in One Piece. Yeah. So, it's a, this one isn't on him. It's on the guy who
got it. Well, I think it's always on them, because the ace one is the pronunciation gag of.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's.
It is kind of like, how someone gets the, trying to check his character on their arm as the character from garbage or something. I think it means hope or strength, but it means something else entirely. Like, this guy just gave a swan name with no idea of local custom and has got that tattoo down there.
I want to get this cool name on me. Yeah, like page one. Just get that on there. It's like, shit, I've no room for the P. Sorry, I still got an arm. It's cool. We can make this work. It won't look any more ridiculous when I'm fucking Spinosaurus, I swear.
Frankie and Usopp are running through the town and because they're trying to avoid, I can't remember what the code name for them is, but it's basically page one, Drake and Hawkins.
Yeah, headliners, is it?
No, they're not, they're like the, there's like another name as well.
Yeah, there's a few different group names that's catching me, but yeah, I like the way Frankie's like, I can't believe they're after us, and Usopp's like, yes, cause you were starting fights, and he's like, sometimes you gotta suplex a guy.
Yeah. It's just I'd forgotten why they were in trouble and exactly who they'd be beating up to get into trouble. Which now, paints an entirely different picture knowing what happens in the comic. And they run into Sanji and Law. We get a difference in Law's captaincy and, Luffy's captaincy. He's basically said, if you get captured and tortured, just let them kill you rather than tell anybody about
it. Just bite through your own tongue and then that'll do the trick. And Usopp's like, no, I'm going to fucking squeal first thing again. And Sanji's like, if you're going to fucking do that, I'm going to have to save you. And Usopp is like, perfect. Everything fucking works out for Usopp. good stuff. It's good to see the old relationship still there. And yeah, like you said, the complete fucking difference in crew.
Yeah. And, then they hear a lady scream and Sanji just stops and goes, lady. In English.
Oh, hey, lady! That's how you get his attention.
He runs into page one and they're like, come on, Sanji, we gotta go. If Hawkins and, Drake show up, then our plan's blown because they know our faces. But Sanji's like, this guy doesn't know our face, so I can beat him up really quickly.
And also I have a disguise.
Yeah, but luckily, yes. And then he pulls out the, what do they call it now? I can't remember what they did a name for it.
Oh, transform cylinder. I don't fucking know.
Anyway, the thing which allows him to turn into, Vidsmoke, number three. God, they've got a name as well. They're super villain.
Something
name.
Black or something like that. Yeah.
Anyway,
but his color is black.
Mm. But obviously the preview explains that he won't be going by those names. He'll be, Sober Mask. So it looks like all the action happens next week's episode. This was a pretty good episode. I like it. It didn't feel like there was a lot of filler, but they definitely drew stuff out.
Yeah, yeah. And we got one dinosaur kicked in the face, so yes. More of that.
So yeah, Sanji will have to stay there and the other three will leg it before the people who know their faces get there. But yeah, it's also fun watching Dao with all the recent revelations in the comic.
Changes a lot of context.
Yes, it's like there's every mystery has pretty much been revealed that's going on in this part of the story in the comic at this point.
I do like the way most of the things that were revealed in the comic was, hey, you know this character? It's that character you thought it was in disguise. Yes. And I was like, oh, cool, cool. That's great.
So yeah, who's the traitor? Well, if you were paying attention, you'd been able to figure it out for yourself. I was not paying that much attention to it, but plenty of people were.
It didn't ruin it or anything. It just meant, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was fun going on Twitter and seeing all the people who had figured it out and just quite how many clues there were. So keep on looking. If you're not following the manga, there's plenty of clues as to who the traitor is.
Interesting.
Then, finally, we've got Keep Your Hands Off Aizuken. Episode 11 is the penultimate episode, I think.
Feels like it, with that cliffhanger.
Each other's existence.
It feels like there should be like two more episodes, but I guess they tend to get a lot done
next week.
Quickly.
Will be like fixing the sound, and then it'll be show because they're about ready to show. It's almost
they're fairly far along in it, despite the fact they don't have a full script until the end of it.
This is the kind of thing they've got to make time for the Lap of Honor.
Oh yeah.
But you want this to get sorted out, and you want to kind of rush presentation the premiere of their newest work. You want to be able to save that work and then see the adulation that they get afterwards, or something to that effect. The kind of release,
or the kind of coda of where are they now? Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Got the art club back. The guy who I see you asked are defending him as people complaining about him from his last appearance.
I've been that guy. Don't laugh. Don't shout at him. 12.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fine to ask questions. It's a little less to be shitty about.
I do like a bit of like, please for the love of God, basically, please for the love of God, pick an ending, even if it's random.
Yeah, we're kind of on his side there.
You can feel his frustration, you know, it is seeping off. For fuck's sake, you got all these fucking big ideas. Just make something that just, it's fun to look at and we'll get some noise for the town. It's all we need.
Who's the second club who get attacked by the security club?
Oh, they were... what were they? They were the basically the club that researches and archives old recording formats. So they're obviously trying to cut Daddy Backroom deal with Kanemura here to getting replication done for their DVDs for the anime they're making.
Yeah.
They get busted in a raid. They come in through the windows and knock down the door.
The windows, knock down the walls, and then the student council goes like, we'll be taking it from here, boys. It's kind of fucking smack. It's our jurisdiction.
Student council have a taser dart. Which
they have better equipment, yes. Yeah.
We got that from the Non-Lethal Ordnance Club.
And I like the fact that Kanemori has already written out an invoice for the damages while the confrontation is
happening. They were having the conversation.
She explained some of this, what this might happen, as somewhere along the line. Always be thinking one step ahead.
Then we get they discover their club supervisor sitting in a broken down car outside.
What are you doing here? And he's like, whenever you're doing club activities, I have to be around. And you're fucking always in the club. So I was going to play all these video games, but I don't know what video game to play.
But yeah, his lesson to them is you can't have them working all the time. The thing for an adult is you work and you find time to play when you're not working. And if you're working,
which is literally what he's doing. So yes. Yeah.
And one can form the other. Don't forget that. The environment you spend your downtime in, your time for your enjoyment can, help you to overcome things or think up, workarounds to what you do at work.
Yeah.
And that does sound like bullshit, but that's literally what he's doing. He's been dossing this entire fucking show and he keeps interjecting with slight wise words and then fucking just backs off and plays some more Game Boy.
Yeah, but that's it. He's around just as much as he needs to be.
Exactly. Yes.
So he seems, I just
he's proof of his ideals. Yeah.
Who emerges just when they need him to, when actually he's just a lazy. Well, not a lazy. He's just fucking smart.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not getting paid for him doing this because you know, I'm just trying to be sound. Have this be my time off. I'm going to play video games at home no matter what happens. So because
he's not getting
here.
Paid for overtime when they like spend fucking 24 hours in the club. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I also feel like he's less likely to... they're gonna take his advice more than they'll take the other adults, because a lot of the other adults are too close to Kanamori already in personality, she's got it, even though she doesn't enjoy playing, clearly, it's like having to realize that the other two will appreciate it and allow them to do it.
And that they do get something out of it.
Yes.
Beneficial to the business, I would have put.
We get a little of the secret origin of her and Asakusa's friendship.
It really amuses me that it's like, oh, we're not friends. And I was like, you fucking dunderheads. You're best friends. What are you talking about?
We are nakama. It's more than friends. And it was as simple as, oh, we were just had to be paired up in PE, even told to do the exercise that we're doing. We got like the thing where you go back to back and lift each other up, where it was completely two very mismatched body types for this.
Yeah, just further visualizing how they are a very odd couple, but that they kind of get on. I did like when, she pulled out her sketchbook when she was on the train for the first time and, your one's eyes actually not light up, but they become like more detailed. It's like, oh shit, this is really good. But she doesn't say anything, but it's just like the expression tells you all you fucking need to know. It's that she's actually impressed by her new friend, and her art skills. Yeah.
Well, from what we know of her, now and back at her then, she's probably was impressed that here's somebody that seemed like they're just fucking around, but they're taking in some of this and it's feeding into their, feeding into their work, feeding into their passions, feeding into their whatever they wanted to pursue with it. So I think, oh, I can respect that. I mean,
because literally before the train, she was like, why is this kid hanging around me? Why is she carrying my bag? It's like, what the fuck does she get out of it? And she kind of sees this inner thing of like, oh, you actually turned your weird madness into this really impressive art. It's definitely, she's impressed with her. Yeah. It's nice to see.
Yeah. So their play ends up being investigating what turns out to be, they think it's like a waterway, but it's actually a sunken roadway in order to try and get to this tire swing.
That swings like over a cliff. It's like, oh, that's fucking dangerous. We gotta go there.
It's so cool though.
And they're being followed by the sound girl.
Yes, she's really on the fucking ball, because while they were having the SWAT team busted the fucking joint, she had the recording equipment over the fucking edge. She's getting it all.
Need more gunfight sounds.
But this ends up with Asakusa falling in the water and Kanamori having to rescue her, which then leads to they get back the next day and they find a notice is up saying they can't use outside funds. They can't get hold of Kanamori. It turns out she's caught a cold from rescuing Asakusa.
And they're not friends, but they do show up at her house to see if she's well with her favorite kind of milk.
Yes.
Not friends, though. No.
Well, we're okay.
We
got to check in on the producer here, who even while bedridden has been fucking on the
social media.
Just been having a fun, massive charm offensive, or a matter of more came to them because it got around that, oh, we have this... this local school has a club where the members of the kids are like engaging in entrepreneurial activities and doing valuable lessons about
and they're working in the community. Workplace. It's great. Yeah,
and they're really doing it to promote our local prefecture, and then this all over the news, and like the staff of the school have field phone interviews and give statements. It's like, well, we can't say anything about this time, but they're all over, the press is all over this thing. So
the Kanamori's like, they can't cancel us. We're too fucking big now.
And by the way, why are you here? Have you got an ending?
Yes, I do.
Because she's inspired by all this and other little things like seeing the vice principal planting plants like realize, yeah, it's all, the theme is coexistence. And it turns out the aliens are actually Kappas from underwater. And
basically, divergent humanity. We went two different directions. We had a communication method, but it broke down. And this misunderstanding has caused war between the two peoples who have actually a lot more in common than they realize until a Kappa is captured by humans and a human is captured by Kappas. It's like, everyone's like, we'll have to draw twice as much guys. It's like, no, no, they just look like humans. Just draw a little fucking bowl on their head. It's fine.
Yes. Yeah, we see her like taking the scene of where they've captured the alien and just moving a few items around, and it becomes the scene where they've the Kappas have captured the alien.
Yes.
Do this scene, but underwater. It's like, oh, yeah, that's easy enough.
And they get it all done, and then they play it, and the music's wrong.
Fucking Mizusaki say, wow, finishing with Time to Spare, we're pretty good. It's like, no, don't forget ahead of yourself, you got to work on the DVDs next, and then, oh, this is all going too well. It's all going too well, what the fuck could it be? And, yeah.
This amazing dance that the thing opens with does not match the music which is playing.
This fucking one is... Got that local independent artist to do the soundtrack for him. They completely got the wrong memo about the whole vibe trying to go up with this thing.
Yeah, it's way more mellow than all the action and big dance numbers need.
Yeah.
So, can we record and produce an entire soundtrack for our anime shorts in a matter of, I don't know, hours? If you ask me.
Well, they do have like a library, a sound library expert there, so I presume they can get something done. We'll see.
Yeah, let's be like the episode of Shirobako where they get somebody stymied in their production at the last second, and the guys just storm the office of the manga publisher and just get some answers. So it's probably gonna kick in this guy's door and bust into his recording studio and sort him out.
Well, you talk about storming studios, I then think about Pop Team Epic.
Yeah.
So just imagine the Shirobaka characters bursting with machine guns.
Well, almost. It was an airsoft gun. But... I think it was an airsoft gun, as I'm misremembering that. I know, like, once some guy in the building gets, like, hit right between the eyes with something. I don't know.
I mean, even in this, though, that club did have, they were armed with paintball guns to fight off the security club.
Yeah, yeah. Illegal paintball gun. Put down your weapons!
There's the students with the shades and the earpiece firing out the window.
Yeah, and the boss in is like, I didn't order you to fire. What the fuck? There was a lot of good stuff. I did like, the Dudoish Heart guys showing up. They appear to be the, body improvement club of this school. Oh, nice young men.
Very intimidating young men. Yeah. I like the team of the arrival on, like, there was a little line in there when Asakusa was, coming to her, the theme of the film that she wanted to explore, like, about, your surroundings determine the value.
Because it sounds like she's being very vague about what she wants to talk about, and she's looking at a line of answers like, what is war? You know, and that kind of like, okay, you're getting lost in the weeds. It's like, no, she's actually pulling it together the whole time. It's nice to see.
It was a nice thing that just considering her hobby, her talent, her creative pursuit here, it might seem sort of dumb and inconsequential and sort of odd from the outside, but to her, it's something of great value and worth, and that's relative to everybody. And it's by understanding that we're able to respect each other's existence, beliefs, customs, everything else, and maybe get along and not fire on UFO destroying each other. Then have a big dance party at the end, like all good animated films.
She's still chews the rabbit when she thinks a ghost's following them. They make her think a ghost's following them.
I like the way the rabbit has like a high altitude gear. It's like, you know, a little harness so it doesn't fall down.
Strap on it, so it will fall upon it and crap us.
Good stuff.
Ooh, how did I get out of this jam? I want to find out, but I also know it would be an episode closer to it being finished, and I don't want that either. I'm torn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there'll be other good stuff to replace it.
And plenty of reason to go back to it as well.
Yep.
Okay, that is your lot for this week. We will be back next week with more of the same. Maybe my voice will be slightly more here.
Oh, hopefully.
It's slowly getting better, but
that's good.
It's more of a tickle when I've been doing this podcast, but so maybe I should have eaten something to take the tickle away.
I do have some pastels coming from Tesco's on Saturday, so...
How did you manage to score past it? Have you got a good dealer?
Well, the reason I got pastels coming is because they couldn't get me the cough medicine. It was like, cough medicine's run out. Can you take these instead?
All right.
I'm like, guess I'm going to have to. Beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, I bet that's why they're going to get a roll of them. They're going to be all purple ones halfway up the tube.
Well, these are cough ones, so they probably all be purple ones in the first place. I like purple ones.
Yeah, I do. But it always seemed to be that way when you open a tube of those things. It always be, why is always the purple one like filling up what, like over a third of the thing?
It's chemical waste and they're trying to get you to get rid of it for them.
I think I prefer the non-citrus fruit pastels.
But
still laying low. But we'll be here for you, podcast listener.
You got nowhere else to be, sure.
So. That's true, yes. Can't go out.
You've got no excuse but to watch cartoons.
I mean, everything I've got planned is now seems to be hoping that everything will be fine in August. Or at least not fine, but will be released.
Somewhat back to normal. Yeah.
I suspect it's going to have to be waves of hiding yourselves away.
I'll make you run out of supplies eventually, for one thing.
Well, no, but to like keep the levels of the virus low.
It is expected to last like a few months at this rate, isn't it?
Well, that might be optimistic. We'll see. Yeah, because UK Games Expo's cancelled. Well, is postponed till the end of August. I was like, hang on, that's not Amicon weekend, is it? No, it's not. Okay, that's
it's
fine.
Not.
I can catch it on the card and then distribute it around UK Games Expo. And then Rev Pro have got a show on May I've got a ticket for. And apparently if that doesn't go ahead in May, it'll go ahead in August. And I was like, hang on, that's not that, neither of those weekends. No, it's not either of those weekends. It's one of the weekends in the middle. So I may have to just use all my holiday. If I'm not going to take any holiday, may have to all go in August. That's assuming they don't get postponed again.
Oh, that'd be a fun month if
it'll be fun. Yeah, it'll be a massive release, and then everyone, winter's coming. Everyone get back inside.
This wasn't the climate apocalypse I had in mind.
Well, I mean, that is the one positive, isn't it? It's greatly reduced pollution in various locations which had pollution problems. But
instantly, it's almost like humans will destroy themselves, or the planet will be fine.
Anyway, by the time you hear this coverage, it'll be out of date. So
we'll all be better. We'll be loud outside again. Hooray!
We'll be back next week with more of the same. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ta-ta.